J1.
Number 12B.
Now, in Science and Health, we read, Christ illustrates that blending with God, his divine nature principle, which gives man dominion over all the earth. Therefore, we know that the Christhood was not unique just to a special man, Jesus, who appeared at a certain particular period in time. Christ's hood is available to all if we claim our identity. And we have that identical identity with principle. So this is something that we then can go away with this evening, that we claim our true identity, and we claim then, when we do it, we have that identical identity with principle. Now, this definitely means then, when we talk about the fact that then subject and object is one, where when we look out from the divine mind, we view the object, and therefore subject and object is one. But this is not always true in reality. We cannot always say that the subjective thinking and the objective reality is the same. In reality, when we look out from the divine mind, then subjective thinking and objective reality is the same, because we're of that mind that is forming that idea. But when one is looking out from that first degree of mortal mind, then subjective thinking and objective reality is not the same. This is absolutely something else again. All those subjective false beliefs are not identical with objective reality. So when one looks out from mortal mind, one cannot say that the subject and object is one. It's kind of like this whole question of subject and object is like when there's an accident which occurs. In objective reality, let's say that a car comes around the corner and hits and is speeding really fast. And as it comes around the corner, it smashes into the right side of a car. Well, that's objective reality. That's what happened. The car came around the corner and hit the right side of a car. Now, we go and we ask the man in one house, what happened? And the man says, well, I think the car was coming straight down the street, and I think the car somehow hit into the right side of the fender. Well, that's his subjective belief. It is an objective reality. He thought maybe the car was coming straight down the street. Actually, the car was coming around the corner and hit into the right fender. His subjective belief did not coincide with objective reality. This is how when one has an accident or whatever, you know, how there's always these different things that say what went on. You know, people all have their own subjective beliefs about what went on in reality, and very few people coincide, their idea coincides with what actually happened. So all our false beliefs keep us from coinciding with objective reality, you see. It is only when we get into the realm of pure ideas and focus only on divine ideas and looking out from the divine mind, can we say with Schilling that subjective thinking and objective reality is one. That is only when that becomes a truth. So, this then is the lessons, again, of mind, spirit, and soul. We must look out from the divine mind, which is mind. We must focus always on divine ideas, spirit, and then soul says, and at that point, subject and object is one. And also we know that those lessons of mind, spirit, soul are that mind then says, okay, I create ideas, and spirit says, now separate from false beliefs. And when you separate from false beliefs and focus only on divine ideas, then your true identity appears. Now, there's one point that I wanted to bring out here that keeps coming up time and time again when new people come into science or they start studying spiritual things. They have a really funny mystical thing about spiritual being or reality. It's almost a fear of reality. One will almost sit there and say, I don't want to have anything to do with the spiritual. I don't want to give up my nice, warm, happy, friendly, you know, human relationships, and the spiritual is cold and abstract. We've said this again. And I just can look at people and say, fantastic, you're projecting your own concept on what spiritual reality is. People have this funny, funny fear that they're going to lose something. And where this comes from, we don't know. Because what we gain is everything. And what those synonymous terms of mind, spirit, and soul so far have been teaching, do we feel we're losing anything? I mean, we're losing nothing. We're only gaining everything. We're only gaining an understanding of reality. And this understanding brings freedom and joy. Now, Mrs. Eddy said something quite good in Science and Health. She said, breaking away from the mutations of time and sense, you will neither lose the solid objects and ends of life nor your own identity. Now, this is something I can remember really quite clearly when I was in high school, and I used to go down to the reading room once in a while and get those little green pamphlets that the Christian Science put out. And I'd get to reading those, and then I remember once sitting in my room thinking, oh, I just don't want anything to do with science because I'm going to lose my identity and I'm going to be, you know, into this great big spiritual void. I've had this feeling, so one knows how other people feel. You just feel you're going to really lose your identity. It's just a funny thing. But as Mrs. Eddy says here, you neither lose the solid objects and ends of life nor your own identity. When I think perhaps it's a belief of death. When one seems to leave a body behind, I think one thinks you lose your identity. I think perhaps that is where the root of the fear comes in. But one doesn't lose anything. One just loses old false beliefs. What we see as we study science is that mind, spirit, and soul are teaching about everything, you see. When we see here, as we saw before, let me just take it here. Mind is the power that forms the image, we say. And an idea is the substance of that image. Now, we have not lost anything. We just because we know that idea is the substance of that image, we have not lost the solid objects in quotes. Those objects are still there, you see. The fact is that mind forms the image. The fact is that there is an image. The fact is only that idea is the substance of that image. It doesn't mean you lose the image, and it doesn't mean you lose the quote-unquote solid objects, so to speak. One still has the form. One still has everything. All we're saying is the explaining what that form and image is. We're saying that mind is a power that forms the image, and idea is the substance of that image. Nowhere does it say you lose the image and the image disappears and vanishes. It's saying that mind is a power that forms the image, and idea is the substance of that image. Now, have you lost anything? We've lost nothing. We've only gained the understanding of what that image is. It exists as an idea in mind. Nowhere have we lost anything, you see. So this is all that we can learn from spiritual things. We lose nothing. If we can just see, we lose nothing but gain understanding of what reality really is. Why do we want to have a false belief that this is matter and it exists out there when the physicists don't even believe it anymore? Everybody knows it's a product in mind. It doesn't take away from our identity, because those big things of mind, spirit, and soul are teaching there is identity. And that identity is a fact in being. It will never disappear because there is life, truth, and love. And life says that that identity is always eternal, you see. Nothing can be lost. One always just gains an understanding of it. So we're gaining spiritual understanding of our true identity so we can experience the divine life, the divine truth, and the divine love. Nothing is taken away. We gain freedom. We gain joy. We gain everything by understanding and not being bound by limited beliefs. One just can say, what more do we really want than to understand reality? So, this then is what those big super symbols of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are teaching. Mind, spirit, and soul are setting our identity and saying, this is your identity. We are of that one mind, and we are an idea in that mind, and that's our true identity, you see. And it says, and that has identical identity with principle, so you can experience life, truth, and love. You see, it's just stating through understanding our identity. Now, to go on, we come then to another idea which characterizes this synonymous term, soul, and that's the idea names. So let's go on with this term and see what more we can learn from the symbol soul. Now, names. What does this mean? This is something very simple, actually, but it's something that we should say again, and I've said it already in such a way, but I'll just go over it again for the flow of it. Mind then creates diverse ideas. Now, these diverse ideas of mind can appear as a symbol, let's say, as grass. This diverse ideas of mind can appear as stars, we can say. Now, all of these ideas are classified and in their proper categories. Now, let's just focus in on one of the diverse ideas of, let's say, that exists in the world today. Let's just take a humble thing as grass. And I remember also when I was in the Christian Science Sunday School, I remember reading an article that came out in the Monitor, and it talked about the blade of grass and how humble a blade of grass was, you know, that people can walk around, the humility of a blade of grass. You could walk and stomp and step on blades of grass, but they always pop back, you know, and they were really showing humility, you know, in life. Well, let's just then take this idea, grass. Now, we see grass itself, just the idea grass appears in a variety of forms. We know that there are many varieties of forms of grass, and that all these varieties of grass can be classified into their proper botanical categories. So all the varieties of grass can be categorized. Within all these various categories of grass, one blade of grass maintains its specific identity. One blade of grass is unique. One blade of grass is unique. There isn't another blade of grass in the whole world like that one blade of grass. That one blade in diversification, there's many diverse varieties of grass, and how grass is always classified in its very botanical categories. Even so, one blade of grass remains unique. This is a law of being, that an idea must maintain its distinct identity. And this is what the symbol soul then is teaching, that each idea, be it grass, as humble as grass, grass then appears in multivarious forms, and yet it maintains its own unique identity. One blade of grass is unique. Now, isn't that beautiful, just taking the idea of grass? This is true of every idea in being. So soul says, all right then, each idea maintains its distinct characteristics, therefore each idea can be distinguished from every other idea. Therefore we can say that each idea is definite, or each idea has a name. And this is where you come into this idea of name, because each idea can be defined or named. You see, because each idea has its distinct characteristics, then each idea can be defined or named. So name is just a way of identifying a specific idea. One gives names in order to identify a specific idea. Now, spiritually speaking, this particular concept of naming means to identify correctly. Now, naming then just means identifying correctly, and this is an example which appears over and over in the Bible, especially in that one period, I should say, it appears, and that is in that 3,000-year period of Bible history, which talks about naming. And that 3,000-year period of Bible history is always teaching how man should name himself and others correctly, and that we should always identify ourselves with divine ideas and not with false beliefs. So it was during that 3,000-year period of Bible history that everyone was identified correctly and everybody received new names. And we know there that in that period, Abram received the new name of Abraham, which meant the father of a multitude. And we know that Sarai received the new name of Sarah, or princess. And we know in that period of Bible history, Jacob was renamed with a new name of Israel, which means ruling with God. You see, everyone came away from their false identity and was identified correctly as a divine idea. So in that period, it was symbolized by giving them a new name or identifying them correctly, you see. Now, it was also in that period that God used to be called the God of Abraham or the God of Isaac or the God of Jacob. And it's at that period where Moses stopped calling God the God of Abraham or the God of Isaac or the God of Jacob and renamed God in its proper name as a divine idea and said, I am that I am. God was renamed as I am that I am. So, soul teaches we must identify ourselves and others correctly. And we must identify ourselves never in an incorrect way. We should never say then, I am ignorant, or I am impure, or I am sinful, or I am sick. You see, this is false naming ourselves. And actually, saying I am ignorant comes from a misunderstanding of the fact that I am the one mind and I am the idea intelligence. So always name ourselves correctly. Never say, I am ignorant. That's false naming ourselves. And all this false naming is symbolized in the Bible by Adam, who named everything according to his false beliefs. Adam named everything falsely. So we're just like Adam every time we say, I'm sick or I'm no good. And we're false naming ourselves, you see. Now, there's one more thing I think that I have time for this evening, and I believe there's time on the tape also for me to, I hope, cover this specific little thing that I'd like to cover now. And it's just breaking in then to this idea of representative, which appears on your illustrative material as an idea which characterizes soul. And I just want to break into it, because in the compendium we read under this title, Representative, that man, the representative of soul. Now, this evening we do not have time to really get into the meaning of this particular thing of representative. But there's one thing we do have time for, and I want to go over it just to make sure that we have it clear and others have it clear. And it's that term, man, because it can be very confusing. And it all has to do with soul and identifying ourselves correctly. We say man. Now that term, man, let us look at it. Man is always equated with the terms idea, or man is equated with the term image, or man is equated with the term reflection, or man is equated with the term expression, or man is equated with the term representative. Now, what does this mean? Why is man always equated with the term idea or image or expression? Have we wondered why it always says man is idea or man is image or man is the representative of soul, you see? Why? Now, this is something very fundamental to our teachings, and it's very important that we see this, and I know we must go over it many times. Now, in biblical times, the writers of the Bible use two terms. The biblical writers use two terms. They use the terms God, and they use the term man. And they use the term God and they use the term man in order to explain reality. Now, these are two terms, God a term and man a term, which were used by biblical writers in order to explain reality. Now, God was used by those biblical writers as a supra symbol. To the biblical writers, God didn't exist actually per se. God was a symbol. It was a supra symbol which stood for divine identity. And to those biblical writers, man wasn't an identity that exists separate from God per se, but man was a supra symbol, you see, which stood for the self-operation of this divine identity. So those biblical writers were reasoning with symbols. They were reasoning with God, which stood for divine identity, and they were reasoning with the symbol man, which stood for the self-operation of this divine identity. So God and man were just symbols which symbolize the nature and operation of reality, but let's see them as symbols and not people or things, not a God somewhere and a man somewhere. They were reasoning with symbols, and at those times they chose the words God and man. And the term God signified the divine identity and man the operation of that identity. They were symbols. Now we must not be fall into the trap of dualistic reasoning, which was not intended here by the Bible. We must not reason that there exists somewhere a God which exists separate from our own being, and that there exists somewhere a man which is isolated from God, and say, well, then I'm man. You see, why do we always claim that I'm man? Why? Why? We've just been educated to say, I'm a man, and that somewhere there exists a God. This is false first-degree reasoning. This is false reasoning with those symbols. It's a misunderstanding of the symbols in the Bible of God and man. Those biblical writers were reasoning with super symbols, and they used those terms God. They could have used any term. They used the term God, and they used the term man, and we, in a human limited sense, came along and said, well, let's see, then there must be a God somewhere, and we're man, and I'm man. Who said? Who makes us identify that we're man? I mean, where? The Bible is teaching with symbols, and it's talking about God or true identity, and it's talking about man or operation, just symbols. So we see then that these are symbols. Now, this is what the science of Christian Science teaches then, that God is just a name or a super symbol which was given by those biblical writers to signify the divine identity. And this super symbol God then has just been seen in newer terminology. It's a symbol God, so we say, okay, we want to, the divine identity has to be symbolized, and that the divine nature and essence of reality must be symbolized. So the new terms which Mrs. Eddy gave for God were mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. These were the super symbols now in turn for that symbol God. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are symbols which explain the one identity, just like the big term God did, you see. So now we have, instead of the term God to reason in a symbolic way with, we have the symbols of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love to explain our true identity. So we see in reality, I am mind. Well, in other words, when we're looking out from reality, we very well have before said, could have said, I am God. There was no reason we should have said, I am man. But if we drop the symbol God, we say, I am mind, because mind now is a symbol to use that term. So, I am mind. My very own mind is the divine mind. I am the idea intelligence. I am the idea power. I am spirit. I am all the ideas which characterize spirit. You see, I am idea of understanding. I am idea of purity. You see, we identify ourselves very easily, don't we, with the symbol mind and all the ideas which characterize spirit, do you see? So, all we see is we're reasoning now with new symbols. Now, That was what we used to call God, or this what God used to symbolize. We now say mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and very easily we can claim I am mind. We do it very naturally. But it was always kind of hard to say I am God because of the false reasoning in relationship to it. So now very easily we can say I am mind, I am spirit, I am soul, I am principle, I am life, truth, and love, and feel very comfortable. Now, the teachings of Christian Science go on, and they say, okay, now what about this term man that we always identified ourselves with? We always said, well, I am man. Now, what does this mean? Man was just a super symbol, and man was just a super symbol by the biblical writers, which symbol stood for the self-operation or self-expression of being. Therefore, man is a symbol which stands for the fact that mind expresses itself. Or mind expresses itself as idea, or mind expresses itself as image, but mind always expresses itself. Man was a symbol given for the fact that mind expresses itself, you see. It was a symbol for self-expression. It was a symbol of the fact of God being conscious of himself, and that being conscious of himself was given the symbol man. The act of being conscious of himself was given the symbol man, you see. Now, what we then must see then, that these are just symbols, and we should not be confused with false reasoning of mortal mind, because mortal mind just misunderstood those symbols. Mortal mind misunderstood those perfectly spiritual symbols. There's nothing wrong with the symbol God, and there's nothing wrong with the symbol man. It was all our false interpretation of those symbols that has led to erroneous concepts, where man came along and said, well, there was a God here and out separate, and I'm man. No. You see, those were symbols of reasoning. And mortal mind just misunderstood the symbols of God, which stood for divine identity, and man, which stood for its self-operation. And that's the only way those biblical writers needed super symbols, you see. They needed symbols to talk about reality. So, let us not fall into mortal mind's trap of incorrect reasoning. Let's just reject it and see it for what it is. It's just misunderstanding of perfectly fine spiritual symbols. But these spiritual symbols, which are fine, there's nothing wrong with God if it explains in a super way identity, or there's nothing wrong with man if we can always hold to the fact that it means a self-operation of being. But we see this leads often to confusion because of what the world believes. And Mrs. Eddy foresaw this confusion, which always arises by using these very spiritual symbols of God and man in order to explain realities. So finally, in her last chapters of Science and Health, she drops entirely those symbols, God and man, and instead she uses the symbols, principle, and idea. Instead of the symbol God, Mrs. Eddy then uses the term principle. And she uses that term principle as a super symbol which stands for God, because principle is a term which includes all the other ideas of mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, and love. So when she says principle, simultaneously we know she means mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. She means all seven. But instead of always saying mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, she used the super symbol principle, which included all those other ideas. So God was replaced by the super symbol principle, which meant mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now, the term man as a symbol, Mrs. Eddy then used the term idea. And idea was the super symbol she used to stand for the divine operation, the divine expression, the divine image, or the divine idea. So today we reason with the symbols, principle, and its idea, meaning principle, the divine identity, and its idea or its operation. And Mrs. Eddy goes on to state that principle and its idea is one. So we do not worry about whether I am principle or whether I am idea. Principle and its idea is one. I am mind and mind and its idea. I am mind and its idea. I'm the divine mind and the idea that mind and image mind forms. So, again, let's not be confused and avoid any confusion in reasoning. Our symbols then today are principle and its idea, principle standing for the divine identity, and idea standing for the operation of that divine identity. So we see then for that these are symbols which are used to explain reality and which are used to explain our very own identity.